The biggest learning for me over the years has been the way at which we communicate with our customers. You have to meet them where they're at based on their knowledge and their experience.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Shuang Esther Shan, and welcome to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. Imagine a company that only opens up its store 4 times a year. Meet Fluff, the Australian beauty brand releasing refillable products through quarterly drops while selling refills year-round. Founder Erica Giratz is intentionally building a business model that challenges customers to think before buying. As a serial founder, Erica ran a marketing agency and co-founded the successful skincare brand Frank Body. She is here to chat about balancing sustainability with profitability and how she's brought more awareness to Fluff with storytelling. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Very excited to learn more about your business journey, which you are a serial founder, you ran an agency, you founded a skincare company, which eventually led you to Fluff. Tell us what drove you to create this new brand.
Yeah, being called a serial founder is such a funny one because it doesn't immediately land with me, but then I can totally relate. Like, as a fact, I have had several businesses and it's just been my journey. Like, I still say that I'm a writer, and it just happens that writing has taken me down several different paths. And right now I am working on Fluff, which is a beauty brand, or we like to call it a casual cosmetics company. And our whole vibe, or our whole, I guess, statement is that makeup is fun, but it's not necessary, and that beauty is actually so much more than makeup. So while we have a product, like, we're really about a message and about communicating to customers this idea that beauty is so much makeup, that it could be so much more than just a makeup product. And that's what we're excited to explore over the years.
And there's so many different components you have, especially with your social media content. That's how we've discovered Fluff. And also, in addition, you're really building up this community and having those conversations around beauty. And I think what's unique is that it sounds counterintuitive, right? The typical beauty brand is asking consumers to purchase as often as possible, and it's mostly brand or product focus, but you're having this wider discussion and you're limiting the amount of times that new customers have access to Fluff. So talk to us about this drop model. Talk about this whole philosophy and how it caught on with this community.
Yeah, so Fluff is online. We originally had a store, but shifted to being online after COVID, or solely online. What we also did was move to a drop model, which isn't necessarily anything new. We definitely didn't invent this concept, and a lot of fashion brands use a drop model, and some makeup brands or beauty brands use drops specifically for certain products, but it's how we run our entire business. So our website is only open 4 times a year for 7 days. And really, it is a marketing strategy. It allows us to, I guess, generate demand for the product. And in that time that we're not on, it really allows us to focus on messaging that we really care about that isn't product related, that helps build our brand and helps build our community. It's something that we've been doing for almost 3 years now, and it was an experiment for me. It was something that I wasn't sure would land or continue to land with our customers, but with each drop, we see our audience base growing with the help of social media and platforms, particularly like TikTok. So it's been a really interesting journey. I think launching a beauty brand now is very different to launching a brand 5 or 10 years ago, or for the brand that I originally created. And as a founder or as a small business, you're constantly having to innovate or to ideate about different ways to connect with the consumer on these platforms and through these mediums that are moving so quickly.
Yeah. And I think it's so unique because you feel like you're building this community, and also all of these different people are also talking about Fluff. For myself in particular, I actually heard about Fluff through a curator who's talking about different brands. And then that's how I went in and discovered the brand. Was it scary to kind of go away from the traditional model? And how did you confirm that this new idea and this new business model is something that is viable, that you can make work year round.
I mean, there's always an element of risk in starting a new brand or a business. Usually a founder might have a hunch or an idea or a need for the product themselves, and then they believe that there'll be more people like them. Obviously, we did a lot of research into our customer base and into the industry and the market to know what our potential was. But I also had this emotional driver really to create a different narrative in the beauty industry, which we sort of talk about as an antidote to the current beauty industry messaging, which is very much still about more products, about your worth being assigned to what you wear, both in clothes or in makeup. And I really felt like that wasn't right. And I think there was a big when there still is this growing resistance to that kind of messaging. And we wanted to be a beauty brand that stood for the opposite of that, that told people that yes, makeup is fun and it can be about self-expression, but it really should never make you feel less. Beauty should be empowering, but I think a lot of people are experiencing it as actually quite disempowering. So that's where Fluff comes in.
The model is interesting because it's also allowing you to be sustainable from the business aspect and the viability aspect, because you're only producing what is demanded by the customer. Talk to us about how that was a concept that got validated by customers, and also it helps you with the operational side of the business as well.
Yeah, we had a really interesting content piece on TikTok about this, where a user had actually commented on one of our previous posts that we were creating artificial scarcity. And our response was that it's very much twofold. A drop model, yes, is a marketing tactic in which we are trying to drive demand by restricting, I guess, the availability of our products or limiting the time of which a customer can buy. But we are limited ourselves by our minimum order quantities with our manufacturer. So with each drop, we only have a certain amount of our cloud compacts and our refills to sell. And our products take around 12 weeks to produce each time. So we are trying to forecast and budget out over that year an allocation of drops, along with growth on social media, which in some way we can control. But as a lot of businesses know, some of it is out of our control, and all it takes is either working with an influencer or having someone influential on their own accord buy your product and post about your product, that your forecasting can be blown out the window. So it's an interesting one where I could say that, yes, this is a marketing tactic of ours, but it's also very much like reliant on our stock levels and our negotiations with our manufacturer due to cost of goods and our minimum orders.
Yeah. In a sense of being sustainable, it's also making you financially viable and making it help you to be profitable as well, which is something that people feel like the two often don't usually go hand in hand. The other aspect is you created this compact and this refillable format. It's also something you had to work and negotiate with manufacturers to create and iterate on. Talk to us through that process of finding someone that was able to partner with to bring this vision to life.
Product manufacturing is sort of, it's one of my favorite things and then also one of my most dreaded things. And when I first started this brand and we were talking about the product we wanted to create, we were looking at very stock standard plastic packaging or componentry. I didn't know what was available at the time. And the material that our compact is made out of is called Zamac, and it's a mix of metal alloys. And it was only because I went to Cosmoprof in Hong Kong and was walking the aisles for, I think it was 2 days and hours on end, and actually came across on the last day this one specific manufacturer that used this material. And because it's a mix of metals, it's actually quite weighted. It feels really like cool to the touch. It's a beautiful material and it lasts for a long time. So with any traditional sort of plastic clamshell compact packaging, you know, if you were to drop that, that would break. It scratches really easily. When the product falls out in it, it looks really dirty. It's just not a very pretty item in itself, which feels counterintuitive to the beauty industry in general. So when we found this Zamac, like, it's such a beautiful piece, and it really reminded me of some Art Deco references or the time at which makeup or women's cigarette cases or their lipstick cases or their powder cases were also made of metal and looked like jewelry. And it was something that women really coveted and wanted to display. But somewhere along the way with industrialization, we lost that desire. We went for the easy option. We went for the cheaper option. So fluff for me was a chance to do something differently, to create a product that we weren't just proud of the formula, but the packaging too, that was an art form in itself that people wanted to display. And again, for me, it was this sort of confirmation that we could do something different in the industry. And I very much talked to other founders about understanding why they're creating a product and what their point of difference is, because we are in a very saturated marketplace. There are so many brands. There are so many celebrities now creating brands. We're competing on so many different levels. So if you don't have that product differentiation, it is really hard to cut through.
Yeah. And Fluff's packaging is so eye-catching and it is so unique. And I feel like that's kind of comes from the work that you put into to find that manufacturer and also work with them to create the end product. For fellow founders going through that process, what's your advice for negotiating and building up that relationship where you can actually convince someone to take a chance on you and create something new together?
It is a very difficult one. And being completely honest, I was fortunate for several reasons. One, in that I had my previous experience with my first brand because that was successful and I had the credibility behind it. I was able to start having conversations with manufacturers, which a lot of small businesses or indie brands might struggle to have access to. Secondly, we had capital. We raised just under $1 million as a seed fund. And that allowed us to have conversations with a manufacturer that had high minimum order quantities. And as well, because our product, it's not a plastic component, so it is a lot more expensive than creating a plastic clamshell packaging. So there's those things that, I guess, come into play. But once you are talking to manufacturers, we even have a limited amount of negotiating skills. We're a small business compared to some of the other businesses that this manufacturer is working with. There's only so much we can do, and that I have to recognize where we are in terms of their client hierarchy, I guess. But it is all about, I think, telling them what your vision is for the brand and for the product pipeline so they know, I guess, what sort of future business they have from you, and then trying to be smart about your formulations or particularly your shade range, like how you can divide your minimum order quantities across shades if it's possible, splitting your stock levels across your different regions. There's little things you can do and ask them to sort of help based on the experience they have with other brands. But one thing we did was sample with a few different manufacturers. And I really do think it's wise to know what is out there and to not be solely reliant on one manufacturer, because anything could happen and you don't want your whole business to be reliant on that one manufacturer.
Yeah, very practical advice. And I think the other aspect is if other founders want to think about being more conscious in consumerism and have the thread of sustainability within their model, regardless of what industry they're in, what kind of exercises would you recommend that they should do or things they should think about so that they have that pillar built into their business model?
I think if you have the opportunity to have these conversations with yourself or your business founders at the start, then that's so worthwhile, because it's much harder to implement in the middle of your business operations. So really thinking about the end consumer and also understanding the market and your competitors and the landscape and what they are offering. I think the standard in beauty has risen so much in the last 5 to 10 years. When we first launched our refillable products, no one was talking about refillable beauty. And now it's sort of commonplace. It's an expectation of brands. So I think it's really important for founders to understand what consumers expect now of beauty brands, everything from packaging to ingredients to your secondary packaging and how it's received, and to try and make those better decisions from the start, because it's so much easier than having to undo or replace, say, packaging or formulations or componentry down the road. And for us, we talk about Fluff really as a refill model business, maybe more than anything, because our compacts are designed hopefully to last a lifetime or for a long time at the very least. And so you buy that once and that's your entry into the brand. And then it's about refilling and trying different colors and shades. So I think a founder really has to balance this idea of sustainability with the idea of retaining their customers and keeping and trying to get the most out of them in terms of their lifetime value.
You're essentially creating this new lifestyle for the end consumer to be in the Fluff life and also adopt this refillable format, which is so fascinating. And I think your brand and storytelling plays a big part of it, which I'm very excited to chat about. Before we jump into that, I would love to just take a moment to thank our listeners for tuning into this episode. Wherever you're getting your podcast, make sure to follow Shopify Masters. And if you haven't already, give us a review and some thoughts and feedback on the episode. We love reading them and incorporating it into the show. Thank you so much. A big part of Fluff's success is from the brand identity you've built and also the storytelling around the brand. For founders who are going through that exercise of finding a unique voice and standing out amongst the competition, what are some exercises they can do?
Yeah, brand building is one of the trickiest things, I think, especially today, because of how saturated the market is and how easy it is for other brands to replicate content and even the rate at which consumers consume content. So I think the expectations of a founder to be constantly producing is quite exhausting. And it is one of the reasons why we moved to a drop model, was that I found that I was getting fatigued of talking about our two products day in and day out. It felt wrong to be pushing product on consumers every single day, especially when our message was that makeup wasn't necessary. And yet every day we were telling people that they needed to buy. So I think it's an opportunity or an invitation to for founders to really think about the messaging that they want to receive and what feels overwhelming for them, what feels appropriate for them, what is a genuine sort of conversation or how they would like to relate to a brand. And sometimes it's that simple. I find a lot of founders often feel like they have to fit a certain model or they have to do what is already out there. There is this very typical sort of D2C formula for comms, but Fluff has really tried to push against that and know what is, I guess, like a good aspects of that formula or what boxes you have to tick in terms of just satisfying what consumers know and are familiar with, but where there are opportunities for you to do something different and to really have a point of view or a perspective or an opinion. When we approach our content, I mean, the brand was initially designed for a younger audience. We were really interested in the Gen Z consumer before anyone was really talking about them. That was just sort of my personal, I think, obsession and connection to my younger cousins at the time we were launching. And I was obsessed with how they were consuming content in particular and brands. And I was actually more emotionally invested in their mental health and the messages that they were receiving around beauty. And so we wanted to change that narrative. I think that intention is still really relevant today because you have a lot of brands still communicating messaging that isn't appropriate or that is very subtly not positive within the beauty space. So for us, we want people to feel like they can see themselves in the Fluff brand and then feel like our communications maybe challenge their thinking, but challenge their thinking in a positive way around beauty, around how beauty is connected to identity, around their consumption habits. And then that plays out in a lot of different ways. I create founder pieces from a newsletter to post on our Instagram and our TikTok, really having these honest conversations. We're very much prepared or welcome constructive criticism or conversation or debate because we think a lot of brands still close their doors to conversations with their customers, even though they say they're listening or they want to have a conversation. So that's a big thing for us too, like actually making sure it's a dialogue.
Because a lot of the times, to your point, beauty brands do either talk about a lot with their products, or they'll use a strategy where it's very founder focused. And you've taken this different approach where I think we do use the buzzword of community a lot, but I think Fluff is truly having those two-way dialogue and being very different in its way of storytelling. Was it ever tempting to like jump on certain trends or seeing something that is a popular type of content to not be swayed by that and actually kind of stay consistent in the approach that you did want it to take?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie. We are definitely tempted to or have been swayed by what is trending or what the majority does. It's very hard to not be influenced. You almost have to have blinkers on as a founder or as a brand and to really stay in your lane and to know that that sometimes means it's going to be a slower, harder journey, but it is worthwhile in the end because you have something that is really ownable and unique to your brand that customers remember and then actually start, I guess, pushing out in their own way. So for us, an example of that would be our editorial platform, which is called Fluff Issues. And that is contributed solely by our customers or our audience base. And whereas most beauty brands might have typical beauty articles or features like top shelves or what's in your beauty bag or the five latest beauty trends, our issues are all about people's concerns or feelings towards the beauty industry or about themselves and their identity. So they're almost like journal reflections or pieces. We hardly edit these pieces. They're just posted there for people to view. And again, it's just a different perspective because I really felt like because I had a previous brand, if I was just going to do the same, I may as well have stayed. I wanted to create something different. And that's really what I think guides us is this different and not just different for the sake of being different, but different that aligns with our values and the conversation that we want to have. And at what pace, but also I guess what level we want to have with our customers. Because I think the biggest learning for me over the years has been the way at which we communicate with our customers. You have to meet them where they're at based on their knowledge and their experience around products or around the industry, because no one wants to be shouted at or made to feel like they don't know what they're talking about. So it is really about understanding your customers and I guess all of their motives or their drivers or the context to which they're purchasing from you so that you can really build a loyal community.
And to that point, I think you've really put the customer at the forefront versus other brands might be partnering with influencers a lot. And that's another approach that you've really been able to differentiate where you're not actually collaborating with influencers in that way. Yeah, like why was that also an important part of the philosophy of building Fluff?
I think my relationship to influencer relationships is sort of quite tumultuous. And I think we previously had built a brand based off influencer relationships and they felt very transactional. Something didn't sit right about the way that influencers were talking about our product or the messages that they were putting out there. And I felt this unease that consumers were idolizing these people based on their highlight reels and based on these lifestyles that were very manufactured and it didn't feel real, which I think has just slowly happened over the last sort of 10, 15 years, whereas an influential person is still a very valid idea and concept. And so I think for a brand, it is about defining what an influential person is for you and how you are going to work with them. And so for us, influential people are those that contribute to our issues page. They are people whose feeds look like the type of person who would buy Fluff themselves that isn't manufactured or constructed. We still do gifting. That is something that we have participated in as a brand, and I think it is useful and worthwhile. But we gift on the basis that we just want people to have our product who we think align with our values and our sort of brand representation or aesthetic. We have no expectation that that will post. We have done, I can probably count on my two hands, the amount of paid actual influencers that we've engaged with. And some of them have been worthwhile and they were people that we spoke to for a long time. Others haven't been as worthwhile, but they were an experiment for me. And that's something that I do suggest for founders is to experiment and try and challenge yourself and your ideas and some of your strong opinions And that was one of mine, that influencers didn't work or that I didn't like them. And I was like, I should challenge myself on this. And every now and then we should put one out there, see if it works, see if it moves the dial, without then shifting our business model to rely on influencers, because it's a very sort of hamster wheel exercise, and that you're constantly then having to find more influencers, pay them. And then this is why we have ended up in a place where their rates are so high, because brands have just said yes. So I think it's about, again, finding what your definition of an influencer is, and different ways to work with them.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you're building this business model where the company itself is self-sufficient, and you're not relying on, like you said, the growth engine that is influencer marketing. But then you're also kind of incorporating influence in different ways, where for the top of funnel, you are creating a podcast, you're having these discussions, and you're having these articles to really drive awareness for the brand. Chat to us a little bit more about the approach to invest in editorialized content and a podcast.
For any brand, you have to really think about your available resources and then the conversations or the content that you want to create. And there are so many platforms and so many mediums that a brand can participate in, but I really don't think that means that you have to be across all of them. It's just so much to ask, especially for a small business with limited resources or funding. For us, a podcast made sense because we essentially had access to resources production-wise. We knew the types of conversations we wanted to have, and we felt like they would be valid conversations or what our audience wanted to hear. I think podcasts in itself are becoming a very valid platform for many brands, and just another form of marketing for them to reach new audiences. And then for us, it's all about repurposing that content, filming all of our podcasts so that we can put them up as reels or on TikTok, taking some of those conversations, perhaps repurposing that into blog content, etc., thinking about the reach that we can have with them. And in a way, our podcast very much is our influential or influencer program in itself, because the people that we talk to generally repost that content themselves, and that gives us access to their audiences and communities.
And I think with all of that content, it has really allowed you to reach new audiences. I think within the States, the customer base has doubled within the last few years. Has there been specific episodes or TikToks or different content pieces that have really moved the needle in terms of growth for you?
So our podcast has been really interesting. I also personally wanted to have some different conversations that weren't happening in the beauty industry that I knew might be a little bit topical or perhaps polarizing and would draw people in. We have done several conversations just like this with international guests, where we sacrificed potentially the audio or visual quality because we knew that it was still going to be a valid conversation. And because we also knew that customers, their expectations of content, it's dropped in a good way, in that it doesn't have to be some fully staged high production output anymore. Conversations like this actually feel often more genuine, more real when you can see the guests in their natural environment. They're more comfortable having open conversations. So we have one podcast episode with Jessica DeFino, who's quite a well-known American beauty writer, who typically has a really interesting take on the beauty industry and, I guess, the marketing strategies or the brands that aren't having a positive impact. And a lot of brands, I think, wouldn't go on Jessica's podcast or wouldn't have a conversation with her in fear of her confronting them or talking to them about things that they don't want to talk about, whether that's ethics, marketing, production, sustainability, you name it. But I was so keen to talk to her and to have that conversation, and knew that if we were a brand that could sort of stand up and hold that space for a difficult conversation, that that would probably resonate with more people than not. And so we have a lot of traction from that episode. Also interviewing men on the podcast, typically like the beauty industry, I'm making a generalization here, but all of the comms are directed to women for a makeup brand. But beauty for me is just sort of another word for identity. And I'm really interested in the conversations with men around beauty and identity and their take as well. So that's sort of, I guess, podcast episodes that have landed. But in terms of other social channels, we've had incredible success recently with Reels on Instagram, really prioritizing video content over still content. And then TikTok has been our main driver of traffic, particularly in the US. I spent maybe 3 years just staring at that platform, wondering what was going on and how you could consistently create engaging, trending content. Because I think there's one method where you can just throw ideas at the wall every day and see what sticks, and you can have viral moments, but to consistently find a strategy that is easy to produce or to replicate and that consistently engages is a lot harder. But what we found was our content really lands with consumers in that it sort of catches their eye with the nature of the product that is so beautiful, like the Cloud Compact itself being very eye-catching, and then capitalizing on fun or interesting refill moments. So it's a way for us to, I guess, show the main USP of the product, that it is refillable, that we are a sustainable brand, but not in the way that consumers would maybe expect, where you take on this sort of eco-conscious or eco-warrior sort of stance or perspective. Like, we're letting the visuals speak for themselves in the fact that the product is refillable. And then putting Fluff, I guess, in different environments or different situations based on the people who are refilling. So it's not just me, it's different people dressed in different clothes in different settings. So you wouldn't expect that there's this element of sort of mystery and shock value. So that's what we found has really landed. But then we've also done some sort of kind of thought leadership pieces or opinion pieces on TikTok too. So talking about our drop model, talking about the beauty industry or consumption in general, talking about celebrity brands versus indie brands, having these thought pieces that encourage conversation within the comment section, but is really also has relied on quite specific editing from our team, because I think that's another a strategy or technique on TikTok. Not to say it's the only one, because I've seen founders create content where it's just their stream of consciousness across like 3-minute videos. There's lots of different ways, and you really have to be willing as a brand to experiment, try new stuff, see stuff that doesn't work, and slowly build your following.
Figuring out your path and experimenting along the way. Certainly with all of that content success, I think it also leads to more traffic and more visitors to your site. Talk to us about building that online experience and if there's any tools or apps that you've really enjoyed to create like a better experience for the customer.
Yeah, look, in a way, Fluff's experience is quite simple and straightforward, where we believe we can create like meaningful, engaging content. And then our main priority is making it quite a seamless experience for the customer when they do reach our site, and just having this sort of hierarchy of product information or company information really accessible so that it's not a maze for consumers to navigate. We had a very intricate custom-built website when we first launched Fluff 7 years ago, and I really wanted to do something that was aesthetically different or from a design and development sense. I think we were ahead of our time and actually created a website that was not usable for the consumer, or they didn't get it. They weren't familiar with something that was more of an art piece or a digital experience than just a straightforward checkout. So we have really relied on, I guess, Shopify is a foundational platform that is just well known and easy to use and understandable for the consumer. And we haven't tried to mess with it too much. We've added several different sort of widgets or plugins to, I guess, elevate that customer experience, but nothing confusing. And I often think about what I would want, or I still online shop. So I'm constantly looking at different websites and thinking about their checkout experience or their cart experience or their product pages, and thinking what is necessary, what's over the top and isn't really adding, and what is a really good foundation to have people returning and to getting them to check out as easily as possible. But then in terms of our content creation, like, it's very straightforward. We film so much on our iPhone in terms of our social content. We do obviously specific photography shoots for our e-com photography. Like, that's something that I think can be quite straightforward but requires a certain standard or aesthetic to communicate your product USPs or values. But we work with a lot of young contractors and filmmakers for our campaign content as well. And that was about us realizing our capacity and our resources to make that content ourselves, wanting to see a different person's perspective on beauty when it came to campaign photography or videography, and then really being open to, I guess, seeing what people come back with within a certain budget. And because consumers chew through content so quickly these days, we realized it was unsustainable to be having these tens of thousands of dollars of shoots every month or every quarter. It just wasn't realistic. And we found that that higher production value content actually wasn't landing as much as the lower production, but really sort of genuine, authentic, consumer-led pieces that were with these young filmmakers. So that was a big thing for us, just again, to experiment with the type of campaigns that we were doing, really understanding what lands. And we're constantly interviewing our customers, and me actually on video calls with them, asking them what they like about Fluff and what they like about other brands, or what brands they are watching or following closely, just to gauge, I guess, what Fluff's true customer is interested in and their expectations of a brand from content. Because often as a founder, you have an idea in your head, and it's really good to either validate that or challenge that assumption by turning to your customers.
It sounds like you're constantly experimenting and evolving. And I think it might be surprising for a lot of people to discover that Fluff has been in business for so long, because I think one of the recent phrases I love right now is it takes 10 years to be an overnight success, which I think a lot of people felt like Fluff is just like a new brand that came up through COVID. I guess, like, looking forward, what are some of the things you're going to be doing to ensure that Fluff has longevity and the business in itself will be sustainable, not just for the environmental side, but on the, I guess, viability of the concept and the business itself?
Yeah, it is a great question as to what is the longevity of a brand in today's D2C world. I don't have the answer for it. I'm constantly asking my peers or other founders or VCs about what they think or how they would respond, and if gone is the days of creating a L'Oreal or an Estee Lauder or even a Glossier. Like, have we passed that point in time where one brand holds so much attention? And now that so many celebrities are creating brands, can we compete in that space? So it really, again, goes back onto the founder to adjust their expectations or what it is that they're trying to do. And perhaps having a brand for 5 years, making an impact and then closing is a right answer for a particular individual. I don't know. Who am I to say? I mean, for Fluff in particular, yeah, we've been around for 7 years now, and we have people coming thinking that we're a brand new brand. And I have enjoyed sort of working almost behind the scenes or flying under the radar in the beauty industry, because in not chasing that crazy growth that a lot of D2C brands do chase, and I'm talking about growth in 2 to 3 years, which was a thing in the past, definitely with my last brand, but I think less and less now. So it means that we're in it for the long haul. And if we can create something that doesn't feel taxing on the business and our staff and me as a founder, it is a lot easier to see it lasting for 10, 15, 20 years. And that is another thing that probably isn't spoken about in the industry enough, is this founder burnout, or just the idea of, or the fact that so many brands do still close down and don't last over 5 years. And, you know, we just sort of herald or parade around the brands that have done so well, but we don't talk about the brands that, you know, maybe sit under $1 million revenue, or maybe sit under $5 million revenue and are happy with that growth. And I think that's what we maybe need to talk more about. So for me, it's like, can we sustain this business model where we feel in control of the decisions we make about product, about content, so that in 10 years' time, in 15 years' time, I'm not looking at our brand and being like, how did we get here? Or this is so far from what I first imagined.
Thank you so much for sharing all your insights. I feel like it allowed me to understand how you think and how you operate, and it's really interesting and eye-opening. Thank you for your time, Erica.
Thanks for having me.
That's Erica Gerotz, the founder of Fluff. Our show is produced by Gogo Zoger and Megan Coyle. Our engineers are Matt Schwartz and Miku Betlam. Benjamin Gottlieb is our managing producer, and I'm your host, Shwang Esther Shan. Come back every Tuesday and Thursday to catch brand new episodes of Shopify Masters. And if you're still listening, go share this episode with another founder. Thank you so much.